Welcome, O listener, to another episode of Spam, Spam, Spam Humbug. This is episode 157 of the podcast. And to be honest, I don't know if it will be the last episode that follows this format, if there will be something different that follows after it. I'm really not sure. The podcast is in kind of a state of flux for a few different reasons. I mean, one, I haven't published anything since May, if memory serves. And in fact, this recording was from May. What you're going to hear tonight, the discussion tonight, was recorded in May. So some of the stuff's going to be a little bit out of date, which, oh well, it is what it is. I just have been so consumed by work and other circumstances that I've not had a time at all to schedule podcast recordings, to do anything, really. It's been insane. So I apologize for the gap, and we'll see. I mean, I'm not done podcasting yet by a long shot, even though I do have to get both this and the other podcast back off the ground and out of an extended hiatus that I had never really wanted to take, never intended to take, but wound up taking anyways. So we'll see. Regardless, interesting discussion ahead. Sort of following on from the high that was episode 156, this one is much more muted, kind of down-tempo, but still, we get into some discussion about a few different games and a few different movies, too. Chip and Dale, its inspirations in Roger Rabbit. It was a lower-key conversation, but it was still pretty darn fun. We had a good time of it, and there were quite a few people in on the call, so that was awesome. Of course, I'd be remiss if I didn't thank our Patreon backers. Thank you to everyone who supports Spam, Spam, Spam Humbug, as well as the Ultimate Codex, by that means. And as always, a hearty thank you to our co-producers, Seth, Golden Flame, Dominic, Violation, Helgraf Gronk, Pascal, and Thorwan. Oh, and Winfield. How could I forget Winfield? So, with that in mind, let me get out of the way, and let's dive into the podcast.
And have you watched the Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers movie, the new one?
No, I haven't. I've seen some memes starting to crop up around it, but...
Yeah. They used the ugly Sonic as the joke, and they actually made...
Oh,
it's
dear.
Not just a cameo. They made three separate scenes where he appears. So he's a minor character. Not just a quick single scene cameo.
Nice. Like when they can riff on.
Not the crossover I would have expected there.
Yeah, well, you know. It's more original than...
Something just got announced recently as a remake.
Well, this Rescue Rangers...
What is it these days?
Well, that, yeah. What, but this one was like, wow, creativity is dead.
Yeah, in this movie, what it presents is the idea that the cartoon characters are actors, and so the plot is treated that way. They are actors, and they had a job at the children television programs, and now it's been many years. They no longer work on that, and they... Chip is an insurance salesman, and that kind of stuff, and...
Why is it always insurance salesman?
Or I don't know how it's called, an insurance agent? Someone who sells insurance, and...
No, it just feels like that's always the thing for washed-up actors or superheroes or whatever in the movies.
Yeah,
or it is over. I'm an insurance agent now.
And Ugly Sonic is an actor who had a promising career, but he lost his job because people didn't like something about his physical traits, and that the people didn't like him, and he lost his place at the movie he was working on, and now he's there trying to capitalize on the fame he got before he was fired. He's an actor trying to get another gig and try to launch his career.
Well, now, okay. I may be misremembering it, although I did watch it not too long ago, but I think the whole conceit of, like, you know, cartoon characters having, like, basically that was their job, that was Roger Rabbit, wasn't it?
There's a lot of comparisons to Roger Rabbit, yeah. I've been hearing.
Well, especially because it is like another live action cartoon mix.
Actually, there's Roger Rabbit appears in the movie.
Oh, nice. Nice. It's too bad Bob Hoskins passed away. Yeah, man, I was watching that movie recently. Not too recently, I guess now. Probably been a year, now that I think about it, but... well, I mean, come on, the last 2 years don't even count.
In the grand scheme of things, that's still quote-unquote recently.
Yeah, for me it is. You know how many movies I've watched in that time? Not a lot.
Time is relative anyway.
Yeah, yeah. So...
Especially lately.
Oof. Yeah, don't even... I wish I was more animated. Today was just kind of a... I think I was on last episode a little bit about like the work stance and the ever diminishing size of my team. And maybe I shouldn't have talked about that because the Tuesday before I put the episode live, we lost someone else.
Oh, good grief.
So we're down to four. And yeah. And I mean, by
this
the time
is turning this episode, into an Agatha Christie novel.
And I mean, by the time this episode goes out, like the announcement will have been made public. So I guess I can kind of let slip. I won't mention names or anything like that. But it was my supervisor this time that actually pulled the trigger and resigned. I mean, like the opportunity that he landed is a really good one. Like it's one of those situations where it's like, oh yeah, you would be a fool not to take that opportunity. Especially if you want to work in the industry that we are in. So, you know, no fault to him. And I totally understand too, like, you know, just the last couple of years have not been easy. And especially as the team has shrunk and the customer base has not, like there have been many, many challenges and frustrations there. So on a lot of levels, I totally understand it. But you know, still like, there's almost, team's getting awfully thin on the ground, and it's literally a case of where, on the one hand, this could be an advancement opportunity. I might wind up stepping into his role. I'm not sure yet. That hasn't been confirmed. And if it is, awesome opportunity to rebuild. But at the same time, it's like the thing that made this team special was the fact that, you know, it was one of those situations where it did not just feel like people I work with. You know, I left for a while and I was always, always hurting to come back. And so I was really grateful for the opportunity to come back. And now almost the entire team, the original team, the one that I missed, is gone, right? it's like the fable about the boat, right? You've replaced every single board of it. Is it still the same boat?
Is it still the same boat?
I don't know. So, but yeah, it's been kind of a wonky week on that front. And it's like, and of course, like he's announcing this and I'm editing the episode, finishing it up the next night, and I'm like, oh geez.
Oh.
I talked about this and it was a problem and now it's even more of a problem and oh darn it. So who knows? I could be a phenomenally busy guy in the near future. Not that I am not already.
Interesting times are a coming.
Yeah. Yeah, because the last 2 years have just been boring. But oh well. Can only move ahead. That's just how that is. I mean, some things I can look back for. Like, for example, you know, I can click on over to the Nintendo Switch right now and enjoy the fact that Reckoning is available on the Switch. I'm quite a big fan of that.
Re-Reckoning.
Yes, it is Re-Reckoning.
Actually. I still can't get over that name.
Yeah. I think we've talked about that one, too. It's like, okay, that's kind of hokey.
I can't decide if it's goofy or brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, it plays awesome.
Exactly.
You know, it's actually really quite a good game on the Switch. Sometimes the area loads can be a little long, but it is still the same Reckoning I know and love. Still with that bumpy, grindy combat. And I don't know, it's weird, like going through the Switch eShop and it's like, hey, look at all these games that are, you know, from years ago that I have tried and never finished or barely even tried. Like last night while I was watching the Oilers come surging back, I got into Transistor, which is by Supergiant Games. It was released.
Oh!
Yeah. So like they did Bastion was their first one, and that was 2012-ish. I think Transistor was 2014 or 2015. That's Greg Cassavin's studio. Ultima Dragon himself. Can't remember his dragon name. He used to work for GameSpot too. But and then, yeah. And they've gone on to release Pyre and one other, and I can't think what the other
Hades.
One is.
Just hopped up.
Hades, that's right.
Hades.
Yeah.
They're one of those studios that a lot of their games don't really click with me personally, but I'm so glad they exist.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they're doing they do so many interesting things.
There, I mean, at least my experience of, well, Bastion and Transistor now is like they love the narration, right? Everything is narrated. And it's in-world narration, right? It's not like, you know, someone's observing me from afar. It's in-world narration. It's really quite, and Transistor just nails it, you know, because it's literally the massive ass sword that you are hauling around with you that's narrating everything as you go. but yeah, that was so far it's been a fascinating game. The combat system's kind of interesting too, because it's sort of this mix of real time and turn based. I mean, if you try and real time it, you're gonna die. It forces you to turn base. But you can do little, like, once you've finished off the big enemies, you know, you can clean up some of the little enemies with just some real time strikes. But the main part of combat needs to be handled with turn based and just sort of figuring out tactics and strategy and how to move around the battlefield and what powers to use. And it's interesting. I'm enjoying it so far. But, you know, it's one of those things where, like,
it's pretty much one of their games that I haven't actually tried yet. So I may have to do something about that one of these days.
Yeah, I don't know. I picked it up on a whim years ago, and I just never really... I think I tried it once for a little bit, and it didn't click at the time. But then, like, just sitting with it last night, and it's like, hey, this is a thing. I could play this.
Yeah, sometimes it takes more than one go at it before it clicks.
Yep. Hey, Clorthos, how you doing?
Greetings.
Hello, hello.
We were just talking about Transistor. I was commenting on the fact that it's available on the Switch, and so I was playing it last night while I was watching the hockey game. Not that I have any particular investment in hockey, but my kids are always curious as to how the Oilers are doing this week.
I mean, so. And you are Canadian.
Yeah, I don't know. I used to be big on hockey. My family used to watch it all the time, and then, I don't know, kind of after I finished university, I didn't really pay attention as much. But then the Oilers kind of started sucking from about 2006. It was terrible. There used to be, until a few years ago, there was a joke that I could tell, which was, you know, Twitter was invented in 2007, which means that no Edmonton fan has ever tweeted about their team being in the playoffs. So that joke expired a few years ago. They made the playoffs a few times. But, you know.
In the list of jokes that most Americans do not get.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure you could apply it to any number of teams in the U.S. because not everybody has made the playoffs. You know, I'd have to look it up. Like, I literally don't know standings at all. So I couldn't tell you the histories of a lot of teams. But I'm sure there's a couple of U.S. teams that you might even still be able to say that about. Maybe. I don't know. But my kids are curious about how they're doing. So I'm like, okay, I'll watch the game and turn on the Nintendo. And then every time, you know, I've got the volume, like, just barely up enough that I can hear it because of course everybody's sleeping. And it's like, every time, you know, you hear scores and it's like, okay, I'll look up from what I'm doing and pay attention to the other game. But
see, the problem with that strategy is you look up just after the important moment.
Instant replays exist.
Oh, that's true.
And these days you can go to Sportsnet on YouTube and you can watch the replay, like, as much as you need to.
I've never heard of Transistor. I'm looking it up now.
Yeah, so it's by Supergiant Games.
Yeah, they made Bastion, Supergiant. Which I've tried Bastion. Mm-hmm. I haven't gotten, like, super into Bastion, though.
Mm. And yeah, we're just mentioning like Greg Cassavin. I think that's how you say his last name. One of the lead guys at Supergiant. Apparently an Ultima Dragon, worked at GameSpot. So the more you know. You know what game I wish would come to Switch? Stories, The Path of Destinies.
Oh, that would be fun.
Yes. That's I've never finished that one, but oh, that would just be awesome on Switch. That's
that's that game is a good time.
Yeah. It is. it's another one of those games where, I mean, okay, the art design is delightful, you know, sort of that cartoony style.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah. The worlds are delightfully rendered. They're just beautifully realized. But I love, you know, how you just keep coming to one decision point after another. And, you know, like it's very much, you know, very branching decision tree, but it like, it really, it's one of those games that it does actually make me agonize a little bit about the decisions I make, right? It's like, oh, do I want to go this way or that way? Do I want to, you know, this, but then this is the result or that, but then that is the result. And it's, you know, don't get me wrong. I love games like Mass Effect, but I've never found anything in Mass Effect really to be, you know, okay, I need to put the controller down and think about this for a few minutes style of moral quandary. But games like Stories, you know, it's like, oh, right. Okay. Hang on. Time to stop and think.
Also one that's very well suited for, well, let's go back and see what would happen the other way. It's practically necessary in that game at some point.
Yep.
I thought you were talking about Yoda Stories for a second.
No.
Oh boy.
I had Yoda Stories back in the day. I never had Indie Stories. I always wanted that one. But then I finally played it one day. I was like, "Hey, this is just about the same thing."
Star Wars Yoda Stories. Oh, for Game Boy Color. Okay.
Oh, was that on Game Boy Color?
Well, hang on. I'm looking it up on Wikipedia right
now. The one I played was on Windows. The tagline was like,
"Oh, it was released for Windows and then
Infinite Adventures." Game Boy Color.
Yeah.
Which really just meant here's a few different quests that you'll just repeat forever.
Right.
Closest that Star Wars ever got to a point and click adventure game. Which is really a shame. You can imagine the art style of The Dig, you know, a Star Wars game with that kind of art style in the height of LucasArts adventure game making.
Oh, that'd be lovely. Mind you, I'd have just as soon taken the Ultima 6 engine Star Wars game. So,
oh yeah, either or.
Yeah, I'm not picky, really.
I will say though, like the some of the cutscenes from Martian Dreams, I kind of imagine. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's probably how an Ultima adventure game would look like.
Mm, yep, I think I've mentioned this one before, but you know, the one genre I'm kind of, I think that you know if. This, you know, every Ultima fan is going to, there's going to be a pitchforks and torches outside my door, I'm sure. But I would actually like to see an Ultima, like, RTS.
Like
a proper one.
Like a story-driven RTS, like, set right in the heart of, like, the Britannian unification, you know? You could even call it, like, you can even call it, like, Ultima, the Bloody Plains or something like that, right?
Oh, that would be interesting.
Marketing would want something more generic, but yeah.
Yeah. In my head, I'm like, that is a game that I would like to explore, right? Especially if it was like, you know, story driven, like a Command and Conquer, right?
No, Kenneth, we had Lord of Ultima. I mean, that was all we would ever need for that, right?
Yeah. I'd still rather have a Heroes of Might and Magic style.
Okay. I could see you on that.
There is I've seen a Ultima themed mod for Civilization 4 before.
Yeah, I have.
I haven't actually tried it out, but I've seen that.
I think on the Codex there's a later Heroes of Might and Magic, maybe 6. I'm not sure. There is a Heroes of Might and Magic Britannia map. I mean, geez, I made one back in the day, right? Like when I discovered there was a scenario editor, it's like, oh, well, of course, who among us has not made a Britannia?
Yeah, I made one for HOM 3. I just never quite finished it.
Yeah, mine was HOM 2 or HOM 3. I can't remember. Whatever my buddy had, basically. And it was good because, you know.
Songs of Conquest has an editor, I think.
Oh. Because I have so much time for that. And look, one more thing to delve into. Oh, jeez.
Where's Mysterious coin to rub when you need one?
Yeah. Yeah. My kids have a replica time turner. I've tried. It is not the real deal. I wish it was, but yeah. So yeah, I don't even know if Spearhead Games out of Montreal, I think, are the ones who did Stories, The Path of Destinies. And then they followed it up with another one. And again, the title eludes me, but same Omen Sight, maybe? I never finished that one, but
Omen Sight, yeah.
Yeah. It very similar in terms of design, storylines a little bit, woohoo, but a little bit wackier. Stories had a more conventional storyline. Yeah, I don't even know if Spearhead still, I mean, all their stuff is still up, Twitter and their website and all that stuff, but I don't know if they're still active or what the deal is. I've been waiting for news of their, quote, Project Witchstone, unquote, forever. Because it kind of popped up on the radar as having some Ultima-ish elements to it. But it's, you know, it's been Kickstarter coming soon for quite a while now. I think it might say Kickstarter coming in 2021, which, well, anyways.
Has come and gone.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
At least I think it has.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's currently March 744th, 2022. March. Whatever.
Not to jarringly change the subject, but no, I just pleasantly noticed that I now have the Outward Definitive Edition.
Oh.
I didn't know. Well, I knew there was something coming out like that, but I didn't know. I was like, is this going to be like a repackaged, like full DLC thing that I won't get? But it looks like I got it.
You were a big fan of that one. That's the survival game, right? The survival RPG?
Yeah, I really like it. I've spent a lot more time with it since the last times we recorded with it. And I still would say I'm not an expert at it. I'm pretty bad at it. But and I've put it down for like, it's interesting. Like I've put it down for like weeks on end. It's not one that I've necessarily said, oh, well, I need to play this all the time. But it seems like every time I pick it up, it's a little bit better. So that's kind of cool.
Nice. Well, now you get the Definitive Edition, so you can check out what they
Yeah, I mean, I was just scrolling around. I was like, what should I play? And then I was like, oh, so I'm about to fire that up.
Nice. So hopefully it's more than just a straight up retexture. I don't know. I don't know when the new content for Re-Reckoning is coming to Switch, if it's coming to Switch. I should really look into that. Because I think it may have come out already. Demord, if you're listening and I'm getting that wrong, I apologize. But
what was your opinion of Re-Reckoning? Because I heard a lot of like complaints about it.
I mean, I'm playing it. I was talking earlier about playing it on the Switch.
Yeah, I've got it. So, like, I mean, I've played it and everything. I like it. Fine.
It's
just Reckoning. It's not very different from what it originally was. So maybe that's the big problem people have. It's like, I was expecting a new land or something.
Well, there is some additional DLC that's supposed to be coming for it, or maybe it's already come out. I'm not entirely sure, actually. I should probably look that up. Because, yeah, there's the Fatesworn DLC. Oh, okay, Fatesworn came out on December 16th.
That's right, I forgot about that. Okay, so that is out?
Apparently, but I don't know.
For everything or just specific platforms? Did it come out for everything at once?
No, actually, I'm just looking this up now because, of course, you know, I want to check it out. So most platforms would have got it in late 2021. Switch version is still pending.
Ah, that explains it.
Right. So, but yeah, no, that was kind of that gives me some hope for, you know, the future of that IP. I mean, I don't know how well Re-Reckoning sold. I don't know how well Fatesworn sold. But just the fact that they were able to have access to sufficient tooling to produce new content and add it to the game, that's not nothing.
Heartening.
And yeah, so they could do more. I don't know. The major critique I remember seeing of Re-Reckoning, I don't remember if this was at Forbes or whatever else, but was just that it was a... you know, here we are in 2021 and this plays like a 2011 game. which I think mainly, you know, meant that, you know, there's, I mean, I guess, you know, by comparison to something like, say, a Genshin Impact or Breath of the Wild, there is a bit of jank in the controls. But I guess if you've already played the game, you're already parsing that out in your brain as you're playing it. I don't particularly find it janky. I mean, the one thing they did do was, I think they tweaked the camera a little bit, because I notice it still occasionally wanders where it shouldn't during combat, because of course it's trying to focus on as many enemies as it can so you can plan your movements around the battlefield. But it gets stuck in a unhelpful position far less than I remember. So at least there's that. But yeah, otherwise it's still just Reckoning. And there's nothing wrong with that. That was a great game through and through. So.
The main complaint that I remember seeing, I think, when Reckoning came out, which was not long after I had finished Reckoning, and so I said, okay, I'm not doing this again right now. But I have played the base game. But I thought I remember seeing a complaints that basically were like, I kind of expected better, like, revamps of the graphics. Like, people expected Re-Reckoning to basically fundamentally include more like high def texture packs and such, and it didn't meet people's expectations on that. That's what I vaguely remember seeing a couple of complaints about.
I could see that, because it does look and feel much like the old game did. And again, nothing wrong with that. Actually, you know, it looks perfectly at home on the Switch, right? And granted, I mean, that is a bit of a, I guess that's a bit of a backhanded comment on the way that, you know, because the Switch is not, you know, crazy powerful hardware. It's an NVIDIA Tegra. It's an ARM chipset, essentially, right? You're not dealing with, you know, the latest and greatest, Xbox or PS5, which are, you know, built for high-end graphics. The Switch is much more modest in terms of its processing and graphical capabilities. But in light of that, you know, you play something like Reckoning on it and you're like, oh, this feels, you know, it's comparable to just about anything else that's available on the platform. It looks just totally fine. And again, you know, the controls, I mean, there's definitely been some refinements to the control. But, you know, I had to laugh because I remember reading some of those reviews about how the game, you know, is a very 2011 game and it's a little jankier with the control scheme and it's a little bit more punishing and it, you know, doesn't hold your hand and it's, you know, there are areas of the game that don't scale to your level. And I'm like, oh, geez, we regret to inform you that Gen Y has Gen Y has discovered the complaints that the millennials were making and Gen X before them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it more comes down to just as a remastered re-release, not much was remastered. So it's like, if you already own it, why would you like that Re-Reckoning was then released on further platforms is great. But if you've already got it, then, you know, a lot of games come out with a remaster version. And even if you already had the original, you'll be like, okay, I'm going to get that because I want the improvements. For this, there just weren't very many improvements.
That's true. Then again, too, I already owned Reckoning on two or three different platforms. So I got Re-Reckoning for free. Right. So, I mean, maybe that was an acknowledgement of the fact that it wasn't so much of a total overhaul as just sort of, you know, incremental improvements.
Yeah, and I don't remember what the marketing was at the time. Like, I don't know if they made claims that they didn't back up. I just remember that was what people, whether or not it was justified, were saying at the time.
Yeah, I'd have to look back on it. I mean, I take it as, you know, I treat that as commentary that, you know, there wasn't really a lot that needed to be improved on in the game in the first place.
I thought it was fine. I played it just like 2 years ago. It was fine.
Yeah,
maybe the most of it was just sort of like future proofing, getting it away from the whole like Windows Live games now or whatever they were doing back then. Anyway, hey,
I can see.
I was going to mention, I'm streaming Outward to you guys, and if you look at it, you can see I've just found another place where it's like, again, some severe Ultima 9 influence. In giant creepy heads staring at you.
Hey, it's like you have multiple guardians there. All the guardians. But Their faces are not sufficiently Muppet-like.
No, but it's all like very artistically done. It looks very nice. I like the art direction. The art direction of this game is like really, really nice. It's not very approachable, but it's a very good game.
Yeah, well, survival games are always kind of hit and miss. You know, like my kids love playing Minecraft on survival mode, and I'm just like, well, you are stronger gamers than I because I can't even.
Any of the even.
Yeah, I have no evening to offer you survival game. I'll play
even more giant faces, gianter faces outside.
Gianter faces.
Oh, more gianter faces. Very strong Battian of you. Those are giant faces.
Oh, good grief.
And hands.
It's like they're a reaching bunch of stone out for giants you got in buried awesome in
super creepy. I mean, it's a gorgeous enough game. It looks quite good.
It really, again, not to harp too much, but it's in Unity. It's a small team, and you know, that's about all I'll say. I mean, it's a rehash of what we've already said about other games that were made by people that are touting NFTs now.
Wait a minute. This can't be a small team Unity game. It doesn't look nearly generic enough. Like, they just bought some assets from the asset store and slapped them together.
I believe they made their own. Yeah, they made their own assets and their own UI, apparently.
Where's the terrible UI elements? Where's the plasticky-looking faces? I shouldn't be so cruel, but...
Well, I should say the characters don't look that, you know, amazing. But, again...
You know, I mean, we've seen multiple Unity games come out now. And, I mean, I think that if you definitely want... You know, to have the high fidelity realism, it is not the engine for that. Which doesn't surprise, because like I first became aware of Unity when it was primarily an engine for mobile titles, right? That's kind of where it started. So I don't think, yeah, like, you know, if you want the high fidelity stuff, get Unreal. Like, just get Unreal, okay? But on the flip side, you can do some amazing stuff with Unity, right? Genshin Impact. Utterly awesome game. Love the art style, right? Built on Unity.
So yeah, this is the crazy thing. Again, I have no idea what I was doing the last time I played this. I have no idea where I am on this map, and I have to use the locations and the land around me to figure that out. I think this is where I am because it says Face of the Ancients. That makes sense. That's.
I mean, there are giant faces there.
There are giant faces out there. With their awesome,
what do you want for a buck?
Yeah. the cheap. Do you have anything for this game?
Is there a location pinpointed?
No, I didn't notice the location arrow on that map. Which, I mean, like if you wanted to go for sort of the high fidelity, like there is, okay, no, I think that's just an icon. Like I see the icon kind of off to the one side there that's got circles around it, and then there's the blue dot there. But
the blue dot is a city.
Yeah.
That's Berg. And I need to go there to join one of the factions. So I'm remembering now that like it becomes a little bit like Gothic. So you can decide like there are three people in your starting town. They end up in different locations after you do a few quests, and you choose which of those that you're going to try to go along with. And I think I've decided to go with what was the name of the group? Go with the Beatles. That was the name of the group. But no, there's one guy that was like, I'm going to go off to the desert lands where I can just do my thing. Another girl was like, I'm going to go join the priests. And this other lady, the leader of the town was like, I'm going out to the in Marker Forest. And so join me out there. And I think I'm going to try to go that route.
Well, I mean, like, you know, I guess if you wanted to make a survival game, having a setup where... You know, the map did not clearly indicate where you were, and you had to rely on, you know, identifying your location from the terrain and from points of interest around you. I mean, that's kind of how it goes in real life, you know? At least in my experience of working off of a map, because sometimes I do go places where Google isn't. And I still teach the scouts how to survive without the Maps app on their electronic devices.
Speaking of Strong Bad, have you seen the, it's been in the past 6 months, he did a Friendlyware thing where like he did like an old DOS Friendlyware application and he was like going through it and playing all these like super weird slash broken games.
Ah, I didn't see that one. I saw the latest like full on spemail about parenting, but.
Yeah, you should just look up their video on Friendlyware. He actually like ends up coding stuff into one of the games to make it better. And he codes his own
quote unquote better.
Yeah. He puts like him in the cheat on the battleship in the game.
Nice. I will have to look that up. I gotta introduce my kids to Strong Bad. Occasionally my wife and I will make because of course my eldest is herself a teenager now and has started hanging out with friends. So occasionally my wife and I will make Teen Girl Squad jokes.
Oh my gosh.
And then she'll be like, what are you even talking about?
Kristen, like, you look burnt or dead.
Hey, girls, let's go for some Pan-Asian cuisine. Ah, my stomach lighting. MSG'd. Such random humor, but very emblematic, I think, of, you know, where the internet was in early 2000s.
I think generally they've managed to stay pretty relevant. I don't know. At one point, I felt like they had jumped the shark. But I don't know. Sometimes, like, when something's different...
Did they jump the shark, or did they jump the bear holding the shark?
Yeah.
I mean, one's better than the other.
I mean, I think, you know, they definitely had some that were like, okay, that one was a bit of a dud. But then, I don't know, like, it's... They always seem to find a way to, like, come back. You know, there's like, oh, okay, the next one was, that one was funny. Okay, maybe we're all right. Maybe that was just a fluke.
I think the high point was when he had the Compy 386. Mm. And then I think the best videos are from that era, but.
It's the Compy, and you can't stop me. Can you tell I watched those so too many times?
Well, what else were you going to do in high school and college?
Yeah, what else was I going to do when I was sitting in the computer engineering club with exams on the horizon?
I am possessed for 104 more seconds. Decay damage and resistance plus 20%.
I love the physics engine in Reckoning. I just got into a battle with an Etten, two Ettens, actually. And one of them died in contact with me. And so for the next 10 to 15 seconds, my every move was dragging his corpse around. Kind of a twitchy sort of way. It was, it's like, oh, that's disturbing and kind of hilarious. It gets funnier later on in the game because, of course, the amount of recoil that enemies demonstrate to being hit is directly indexed to the amount of damage you do, and specifically, so like basically the amount of rebound, like the amount of how far a dude gets thrown when you kill him is directly indexed to how much extra damage you do past what it takes to reduce his hit points to zero, essentially. So towards the end of the game, as you're able to craft yourself some really truly ridiculously overpowered weapons, there were more than a few times where it's, you know, I'd finish off some low level enemy and he would literally just get catapulted like across the map. And then I'd be walking, like, you know, walking through the area like half an hour later and be just like, hey, what's this random loot lying here? I didn't kill anybody here.
Sounds like the physics from Gothic 3.
Havoc. I mean, Havoc is a great physics engine. Well, no, let me back that up. Havoc is a ubiquitous physics engine. But it has its quirks. So
it's funny when you kill, I think they're goblins. I can't remember what they're called in Gothic 3, but they just become like super rubbery and stretchy. Like they become like a Stretch Armstrong and just fall down onto the ground, tumble and roll.
Nice. I'm trying to think. I never got that far into Gothic 3. Or Risen 3. I don't know. Piranha Bytes games are one of those things where it's like, I like the concept of them. It's sort of like you were talking. talking about earlier.
No, I don't know if I could really
world, right? And Mass Effect does this too. Heavily narrative games, but all of the exposition is in world, right? Whether that's through the characters or through the codex or whatever, right? Everything is in world, and it's just, it's all well told. And maybe it is an Eastern Western thing, because like one thing I noticed with Eastern games that aren't The Witcher, is they might have good stories, but how they go about telling the stories is a bit hokey sometimes, I find. And I find this a lot with Piranha Bytes games. I want to like them more than I do. The gameplay is great. The action is solid. But the minute I have to get into a dialogue with somebody, I'm just like, oh, okay, there it is.
Well, I think I've said for a while that like the Gothic games are like B movies to me. It's like you're not there to be told an amazing story in an amazing way. Like it's the anti Elder Scrolls as far as that's concerned. But the reason I love them so much is basically the gameplay and, you know, all the little things that, you know, are just fun about the world, you know, again, we've talked about it to death, but like just the fact that if you go run up to somebody and brandish your sword, they don't like that, and they're going to brandish their sword and say, hey, put that away. You wander into someone's house uninvited, and they're like, hey, get out of here. No, I mean, really, get out of there. Get out of here. If you don't do anything, they're going to pull out their weapon. You know, little things like that, that, again, I know that more or less are in more games nowadays. I think Skyrim had some, you know, a good bit of that. But it just is not... just wasn't done in the same way. So, I mean, to me, like a lot of the gameplay stuff and also the game cycle of Gothic is one of the most satisfying things. Going out and being killed by a very basic enemy and then say, well, wow, I better stay away from that area for a while. But then you level up over time, you get better equipment. And then you go back and you're able to, you know, go further in the game than you were before. Again, see, sort of the anti-Elder Scrolls there.
Yeah. See, and you like the survival elements, so I can totally see the appeal there. Because in a way, that is an iteration on the survival mechanic, or kind of on the roguelike mechanic too, right? You know, you go in, get killed, come back better. That kind of thing, which just never resonated with me. But like, if I think about all the games that, you know, have really stood out over the years for me, it's the ones that have been really narratively strong and where the story has been told in a very engaging way. And that could be anything. That could be, you know, Transistor, the current enjoyment, Reckoning. I mean, for as much as I love the art design of Reckoning and the gameplay mechanics and how kinetic the combat is, I don't know if the game would hold that much water for me if it didn't have a well-told story. And I know I've said this before in like reviews of the game, right? The first half of the main plot actually kind of drags, and I usually avoid it, whereas I'll just do side quest after side quest after side quest, because like especially with the Fae houses, there's a lot of absolutely wonderful storytelling content in there. And then towards the second half of the game, the main plot kind of takes over and it's just like, ah, cool, yeah, this is awesome now. But again, still engagingly well-told story, The Longest Journey, Halo Marathon, Ultima, you know, Haven, another one that I've enjoyed recently. All games that, you know, just, you know, mechanically very strong, but narratively incredibly strong. And I guess I just kind of, two out of three ain't bad, but it just doesn't quite get me over the hump of, yeah, okay, I'll play this to the end with the Piranha Bytes games. Mechanically very strong, you know, like they're just awesome games mechanically. The art design is beautiful, but the minute I have to talk to an NPC, I'm just like, I remember.
You mentioned Longest Journey. Dreamfall has been on my to get around list for a while.
Yes.
Mine too.
Yeah.
TLJ was good. Longest Journey. So
TLJ was good. The sequel was pretty good. Ending was weird. And then Dreamfall, I think I backed that one on Kickstarter now that I think about it. Haven't finished it, but the parts that I have played, I have enjoyed immensely.
It's been a long time since I played The Longest Journey in first place. Mm. I may have to give that one a replay.
Yep. At some point, I'll introduce my kids to it, but unfortunately, there's no language filter.
Yeah, I mean, definitely tastes go into it. Like, my dad is definitely more into the World of Tanks type stuff and the strategy games. And I have another friend from high school who is, like, deep into, like, what I consider to be like the super complicated strategy game. Like, you, I think he really likes Europa Universalis and
stuff
the Paradox like that. Games.
Like, you load it up and it's like a spreadsheet, and I'm just like, what do I do?
Yeah, I get a good hankering for a strategy game every now and again. Like, well, lately, but Paradox is just a little bit too much for me.
Although, on that, I got it just because you mentioned Excel. There was, I think it was like a Microsoft conference recently. They announced an API to connect EVE Online directly with Excel.
Oh, I saw that.
Like, and there were before. Okay, so to be fair, there were already third-party solutions that could connect EVE Online resource management and fleet management and all the data that you have to sift through to play EVE Online. There were already APIs, third-party APIs in place to kind of sort of export your data to Excel and let you work with it there. But now Microsoft has announced, you know, a Microsoft developed API that allows you to, you know, have all your EVE Online data export to Excel. And there were literal cheers. Like, people were losing their minds because of an Excel plugin.
What was the line that I heard? There are very few problems that a spreadsheet cannot solve. Unfortunately, one of those is too many spreadsheets.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, don't get me wrong. I use spreadsheets all the time in my day job, and they are incredibly powerful tools. But just, you know, the idea of a bunch of, you know, gamers losing their minds because now there's an official spreadsheet API from Microsoft. It's like, all jokes about EVE Online being a playable spreadsheet interrupted by occasional space battles are true. My girls also thought it was hilarious this morning when the Wordle was gamer. Sorry if any of you haven't done your Wordle today.
I've been thinking about the way the computer RPGs and consequence console RPGs started and how they developed. And, well, one thing that, in my opinion, a lot of people will disagree, but I think that the early computer RPGs were true RPGs, and the ones that were created on console were not. They just did not get it. And I'm going to explain why. Let's go back to the tabletop RPGs. Let's see, you got a manual, and in the manual you have some illustrations, some drawings. The first ones for the first role-playing games were all black and white, and as we got more modern versions, they started being in color, being color illustrations with a lot more budget. But you have a book where you have the monsters illustrations, and you're actually playing with glass counters, or you have the miniatures, and sometimes they're painted, sometimes they're not, depends on if you dedicate time to do that. Normally the campaign settings include maps with the stuff, physical maps, and all of that, and then Ultima comes out with manual with illustrations of the monsters, with a cloth map and everything. And the manuals tell you a story, and the game that you're on the computer is actually just a sort of a game board, a digital game board. But you have all the elements of an RPG in a physical form. Then come the console RPGs, and everything is in the game, and there are colorful graphics in the game. the manuals hardly have any substantial stuff. They don't have cloth maps. They don't have any physical elements that create the same RPG feel of the computer RPGs. And in my opinion, they got it all wrong. And they called themselves RPGs, and things evolved differently for the Western RPGs and the Eastern ones, the Asian ones. The Asian ones started wrong and continued being wrong, and to date, they still are. Just a very few do it like a real RPG. While the Western RPGs, a lot of them try to keep that either by providing you with physical stuff or providing lore, extensive lore inside the game as items like books and stuff that you can read in-game to get information about the in-depth lore, which the Asian, the Easterns usually don't have at all. And you were talking about the games with a lot of depth in storytelling. Well, yeah, the Asian RPGs have a lot of cinematics and try to have a more in-depth story, but the world is shallow. You just have cutscenes for the most of it, while the Western RPGs have a lot of lore that you can check, that you can read, and it's not mandatory that you do, but it's all there.
I mean, I'll definitely grant that I struggle with a lot of JRPGs precisely because I feel like I'm essentially a spectator. You know, I'm essentially watching a movie with occasional prompts to do something on screen that isn't really going to alter the outcome all that much. And I realize it's an unfair assessment, but you know, that is sort of my subjective experience of a lot of JRPGs, Final Fantasy included. But I mean, okay, so right away, let's not pick at the what is an RPG scab, because we don't have time for that.
But, we'll be here all night.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't disagree with a lot of your assessments. I guess I'm just sort of at the point now in my life where it's nice to have a box full of feelies. And if I have that option, I'll go for it. But if I don't, I'm okay with that. And, you know, I don't mind the in-game I don't mind that a lot of what would previously have been a feely in the box has become in-game content, whether that's the map or an extensive codex full of lore or what have you. I don't mind that that's been brought into the actual gameplay experience, the actual, you know, electronic contents of the game. I'm fine with that. And of course, I think one of the other reasons that I'm maybe a little bit more sanguine about it now is because I have totally jumped on the digital download bandwagon. Partly for practical reasons. I do not have shelf space for even one more book at present, let alone one more boxed copy of a game. So if I can buy it digitally, I will. That said, I am, in some ways, contemplating maybe going back to doing physical game purchase for the Switch on occasion. Because, and this is sort of a gripe, but so when you have a Nintendo Switch, when you have multiple Nintendo Switches, you can have your same user profile on multiple Switches. And if you have a Nintendo Switch Online, it'll even sync your saves. But only one console can be your primary. And it is only on your primary console that two things are possible. Only on the primary console. So if you are a parent and you have gone through the rigmarole of creating a Nintendo account and underneath that Nintendo account, enabling child accounts for each of your children, as I have done, it is only on the primary console that the child accounts have access to your library of games. And it is only on the primary console that you can launch games without an immediate DRM. You can launch only on the primary console can you launch digitally downloaded games without an immediate DRM check. If you have a second Nintendo Switch, which is not your primary console, you can't have those child users on the Switch. And when you launch any game, it will do a DRM check. Unless, of course, it's a cartridge-based game, at which point you have the cartridge, so you're good to go. Let's play. I found this out on my most recent flight. Because, of course, the kids have we have a Nintendo Switch for the kids, and then I have a Switch Lite, which is my travel gaming. And, yes, I found out on the airplane that the only game that I could play was Breath of the Wild. Not a bad game, but the only reason I could play it was because I had the cartridge. All the downloaded games, obviously I'm on an airplane, not paying for Wi-Fi. Check for you, good sir.
Do they call it a cartridge on the Switch?
I don't know. Game card. I think the access port says game card.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah. I mean, it looks like an SD card, but I mean, you know. If that was like the standard, yeah, it's a cartridge, I'd be like, oh, that's cool.
So, well, it's Nintendo, so I just automatically go with cartridge because what else? Because
of course you would.
Yeah. What else would I call it? Come on. Even that one that took optical media, cartridge.
throw a cartridge in the game, Kim.
Yeah, the Wii doesn't take this, it takes cartridges. but you know, so I mean, things like that are starting to push me back a little bit more towards physical. But you know, whether it's we're talking about Steam or the App Store or Origin or whatever else, I've been on the digital downloads bandwagon for quite a while now. I don't see that stopping anytime soon. And certainly especially on PC, the PC retail market is almost entirely digital now. Almost entirely digital downloads now. Over 90%.
Yeah, so, I went to a GameStop recently and I didn't even see like the little cards that they have had in certain places of buying this game. And it's a digital, no, not even that. And I will say, though, that like and this is not a controversial opinion. GOG has done PC game distribution the best, mainly because you can simply download a backup EXE of the game generally and just have that sit on your hard drive. So in the event, or put it, back it up, put it on CDs, put it on whatever you want. And then if you want to install that at a later time, you can do that.
Definitely. I mean, I'm right with you. I mean, obviously you need a pretty damn large hard drive to back up my game library on GOG, but that's a separate discussion.
terabytes on terabytes.
Right. But you're right. It is nice that, you know, you do have that ability to essentially offline all that content just in case GOG ever folds, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas with Steam, you'd probably be out of luck. I guess you could log into all the games that you wanted to keep, and you'd be good for about 2 weeks. But eventually, the DRM times out, and then it would fail in the next DRM check. So,
back to topic.
But yeah, I mean, it's... No, go on, Drax.
I was saying back to topic, you were talking about the maps and extra content and lore in games.
Yeah, and like I don't mind that being in the game. It's nice when it's there though. And at the end of the day, if I got to get on an airplane, I'd rather have the map in the game than having to, you know, rifle through my backpack to find my cloth map.
But Kenneth, if the avatar, if you really were in Britannia, you would have to rifle through your backpack.
You're right.
If I wanted to do that, I'd be playing Ultima 7 rather than a different Ultima game.
No, if I wanted to rifle through my backpack for something that was essential to my being where I was, I would be on scout camp.
That's the solution. Get Ultima 7 on your phone, play it on your phone,
you and assume then keep it's your not cloth already map. There.
Keep I your cloth map Exalt in your backpack.
Flight. Yeah, well, okay, except that doesn't work because I have the Ultima 7 map memorized. Actually, I have all of them.
Speaking of cloth maps... I was just remembering that I found the Shroud of the Avatar on sale on Amazon, and I ordered it just to get the cloak map and the feelies.
I did that too.
Yeah, and I already have it. I have it in my hands. And I was wondering, who was it that never got his physical copy and was a backer?
He did eventually get it. He got it. Demord.
Yay.
Did eventually get it. I think I took the countdown off the codex.
You think?
I'm pretty sure I did. 98% sure. Do-do-do-do-do. Okay, now I'm 100% sure.
Not checking on the fly.
Well, because I had put the counter up on there for the longest time. And I mean, it was a combination of things that had led to him not getting it. But yeah, it was a long darn time before he got his. But he did eventually get it. I remember there was some discussion of that on the Discord. And so, yeah, that was... And the minute he confirmed it, I like logged into the codex and, and took the thing down, but not until he'd gotten a screenshot, just to, you know, make it official. Although apparently if you still want to get blocked on Twitter by Catnip Games, just start going after them about the book that all of us were supposed to get.
What was it? The Sword of Nidris?
Blade of the Avatar, I think.
Blade of the Avatar.
Yeah. So. But we've talked about that in a previous episode of the podcast. I think that was a two-parter, The Book Betrayer, or something to that effect.
That seems like a topic that would make a two-parter.
Yeah, it was a grand old bitch session, which it's a pity Harmony Dragon's not here. I totally have to release his bitching on Square Enix as a bonus episode. But I guess this is as good a time as any to figure it out, because like for the longest time, the way I was working the Patreon side of things was like, if there was any cut content from the start or the end of the episode, I would release that on Patreon as its own separate audio stream. But who has the time to edit that, really? So now what I'm doing is, starting from last episode and going forward from here, anybody who's listening, the way it works now is if there is any cut content, I'll leave it more or less in place in the time stream. But it'll only appear on the Patreon track, and then the publicly released track, I'll just mute those sections. So that's how that's going to work, because then I still release all the extra audio and I only have to edit once. Ah. I grab Thar's hammer. What a savings.
If you want to join the Ultimate Dragons, you can do so at udic.org, whereat you can choose your very own dragon name. You can also find the Ultimate Dragons on Facebook. We have a Facebook group there. And you can follow at Ultimate Dragons on Twitter or join them on Discord. And if you're feeling really old school, you can even fire up a Telnet client and check out the Wearmount. Hit up the show notes for links to all of these. If you want to participate more directly in the podcast, you can send us an email. Or if you're feeling a little bit braver, leave us a voice message in one of three places: the podcast website, our Facebook page, or on anchor.fm. And you're also welcome to join us on our Discord server to chat with us, to lurk, or even contribute to podcast recordings when they happen. And again, links in the show notes. If you'd like to support Spam, Spam, Spam Humbug, you can do so at patreon.com/ultimacodex, where for as little as a dollar a month, you can get access to episodes the day before they go live to the general public. You'll also get access to behind-the-scenes audio when we have some to share, and possibly other interesting content. But we also welcome your moral support. You can like the Ultima series on Facebook, follow at Ultima Codex on Twitter, or leave the podcast a review on iTunes. And you're also welcome to share our episodes with your friends and social media circles. Spam, Spam, Spam Humbug is a production of the Ultima Codex. You can find show notes online at spamspamspamhumbug.com. Thank you for listening, and until next time, be virtuous.